Good morning. Good morning. I wanted to pass on some, thank you, profound gratitude from our family. As many of you know, my wife had surgery about a week ago. She's home still recovering. We've been greatly loved since we've been here, the 5 years we've been here. But this has been our first experience of, to this level. Hey, we need you to watch our kids. You know, hey, we need meals regularly. By the way, I have quite a list of some of the top, lasagnas and chickens and other things. So for a price, I'll divvy those out. We're very grateful for that, and you've taken care of us. So thank you. Also, if you have loaned us dishes, I'll be out by my car after services today. You can recover those. Thank you. Genesis chapter 12. God has spent thousands of years getting from Genesis chapter 1 to Genesis chapter 11. From the creation to the fall, to the flood, to Babel, and finally to Abram. The lifespan of one man, you could take some of the other men, but of one man, of Shem, Noah's son, he lived 500 years. That eclipses the history of our nation. One man older than our nation. So much time has passed in these 12 chapters. So much life has been lived, and only a few famous people, right, have risen to the top. It's mostly been regular Joes and Jills, right? Regular living this time. And now we come to Abram. God is unhurriedly diligent in fulfilling his purpose. Genesis 12 through 25 brings us now to the footsteps of Abram. I want to pay attention as we go through these chapters together. Abraham's religion, the religion of Abraham that grows out and becomes the law of Moses and one day would become that faith that we follow fulfilled in Christ. His religion rises out of a life. We hear that dichotomy that Jesus wasn't about a religion, he was about a relationship. Well, he was a life, and out of that life came a way of life. Abraham's religion rises out of his life that obeys God's call and moves toward God's promises. Romans chapter 4 connects our faith and our life with that of Abram. Hasn't had the name change yet. Chapter 4, the second part of verse 11. The purpose was to make him the father of all who believe without being circumcised, so that righteousness would be counted to them as well, and to make him the father of the circumcised who are not merely circumcised but also walk in the footsteps of the faith that our father Abraham had before he was circumcised. I want to look at a couple ways that God's call moves Abraham. And I want to look first, go back to chapter 12, verse 1. God's call moves Abram away from idolatry, away from following idols. Now, the call comes in chapter 12, verse 1, which Ahanu read for us. But there's reason to believe that the call, God says, I will make you a great nation, go out from your country and your kindred. That what happens in chapter 12 actually happened, it in time happened toward the end of chapter 11. Nehemiah says that God called Abraham while Abraham was in Ur of the Chaldeans, and really what that means is he was still with his dad and with his family. Stephen also makes the point in Acts chapter 7 that the call to Abraham came while he was still living with his father. Now, what's significant about that? Go back into chapter 11, verse 27. These are the generations of Terah. Terah fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran fathered Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of the kindred in Ur of the Chaldeans. And Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, and the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. It's during that time when Abram is still with his dad, still with Terah, that this call comes to him. Now, what's the problem with the call coming to him while he's with his dad? Terah was not a monotheist. He did not believe in one God. He did not believe in the God of the Bible. He believed in many gods, and he passed those beliefs on down to his family. Joshua testifies to this. If you want to look in Joshua 24, verse 2, and I want to go to these passages because this isn't just one preacher's logic on what's going on here. We know something about Terah from what Joshua knew. 24, verse 2, and Joshua said to the people, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, long ago, your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates, Terah, the father of Abraham and of Nahor, and they served other gods." You see it also in the genealogy. It passes down Genesis 31, verse 53. We'll get to this passage eventually. But you see Jacob here trying to make this deal, this bargain. And Jacob wants to swear by God. He says, "God, I want you to witness on this." Except for Laban. Laban doesn't just swear by God. Laban will obey anything, or he adheres to any type of God. Verse 53. In Genesis chapter 31, Laban says, "Well, how about the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor and the God of their father judge between us?" Laban says, let's just swear this between all the gods. But Jacob won't do that. Jacob swore by the fear of his father, Isaac. Terah was a polytheist. He believed in lots of different gods. And here's really the point, the folly of idolatry. And I want to use Isaiah 44, and then I want to use an old story that the rabbis used to tell. But it's rooted in Isaiah 44. And here's the foolishness of a carved image as a god. Basically, you can go home and read Isaiah 44 on your own. But basically, Isaiah 44, in a few words, man takes wood. Man cuts some of wood for the firewood. Man says, "Ah, I am warm. I have seen the fire." Man takes the rest of the piece of wood, same piece of wood that he cut, that came from a tree, that is warming him by the fire. And what does he do? He turns to that same piece of wood and says, "Deliver me, for you are my God." I share that because it displays the nonsense of idolatry, and yet how pervasive that thought was when God calls Abraham out of that. Now, there's this story from a rabbi. I like to call him Haya. That's probably not at all how he says his name. But Haya the Great has this imagination. This isn't a true story, but it's his imagination of what Abraham's childhood was like. And so the story goes that this old man comes, and he comes to Abram, who is then Abraham. And Abraham was tending Terah's shop because Terah made idols, and he would sell them. And Terah had to leave, so Abraham is watching the shop. And this old man come in. He says, "I want to worship an idol." And Abraham was smart. He says, "You're 50 years old. I made this idol yesterday. You want to worship something that's a day old and you're 50 years old?" At this point, the man leaves ashamed that he hadn't thought about that. But that's not all. Abraham later on says to his father, "There's another woman. She came in to make an offering, but there were two idols. And the idols argued about which one should eat the offering first. And the bigger idol smashed the smaller idol." And Terah said, "That can't happen. They're only statues. They have no knowledge." And Abraham says, "You deny that they have knowledge, and yet you worship what they are." Again, I don't think that's a true story. But it's the foolishness that Abram at this time was growing up in. And we can think of those. I don't need to lay out that level of idolatry in specifics. You know those kind of things. Maybe you've had them in your past, or maybe you see them as you're watching TV or as you're interacting with people in your daily lives. Idols today that are foolish, that sap our time and our money and our energy, and they don't give anything useful back in return. Exodus chapter 20, verse 4, Moses would reveal that before the law came along, because Moses, we believe, wrote Genesis. Moses is revealing to us that Abraham is living out the law before it was placed, given to Moses on Mount Sinai. Exodus 20, verse 4, "You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, or that is in the heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God." Abraham is called out of this foolishness of worshiping things that are things, and they really have no power other than to distract from the real thing. God calls Abram out of this lifestyle. And don't you think, in a way, Abram is glad to get out of that? But now God calls Abram, and his movement toward this promise that Ahanu read for us. The call is to go out from your country and your people and your father's house to the land I'll show you. And here's the promise: I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I'll make your name great so that you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you and dishonor those who curse you. And those who dishonor you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. But Abram's movement toward this promise means walking alongside with his wife through their weakness. Now, what was their weakness? This sounds like an amazing promise. I'm going to take you out of foolishness that your dad lived in and disturbed the family and messed up the family. And I'm going to call you to be a great nation and have lots of children. Or have a child that then has lots of children. Verse 30 in Exodus, in Genesis chapter 11. Wait a minute, God, I'm not sure you know everything about me. Now Sarai was barren, she had no child. Now some of us here who really understand that, who understand that emptiness and that despair of being unable to have children. And God comes to Abram, this family that is unable to have that, and he says, I'm going to take you from foolishness to this promise, and it's going to involve facing some of your biggest weakness, your humanity, your humanness. I think that's my next slide here. Do we think God was unaware of Abram and Sarai's humanness? God calls Abram and Sarai, and he says, I'm going to make you into a great nation. And was God like, oh, whoops, but I didn't know. Man, I wish I would have done my research. That's not God. God calls them knowing precisely what their weakness is. And yet we see Abram struggling, and we see Sarai making decisions and struggling with accepting. Is God really going to do this? Is he really going to work this wonder inside of us? And that's part of the faith, is God accomplishing the promise through human weakness. Now, whose problem was Sarai's barrenness? Was it just hers? I mean, man never has trouble, right? We don't bear the children. Is that just Sarai's problem? Nope. I think Paul's words could put it better than I could. Ephesians 5, 28. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. And he who loves his wife loves himself. As a man, and this is to, especially to our young men and our young women, but also to those of us who give advice to our young men and our young women, if you're going to take intimately from somebody, then it's only right that you commit to taking care of that person. See, it doesn't make any sense for a woman to give up her intimacy, to give up her beauty, and have no promise that she is then going to be taken care of, right? It's in sickness and in health. I mean, everyone gets excited about a healthy, beautiful body, right? But what happens when that body gets sick? What happens when you're called to care for that other person and when another person has to rely upon you in a desperate way? You see, Abraham didn't have the luxury of just being with Sarai when she was okay. He was walking with her toward the promise through this weakness together. He had to care for her as he would care for his own body. They're in this together. And sometimes you can see Abram struggles with that, and they have difficulty, and they try and take things before times are right, and we see them struggling with this promise. But God is not aware of this. And you can almost hear Abram saying, I'm excited to get out of idolatry, but man, so much in my life still remains unsettled. I don't have a home. I don't have a place. I can't have children. I don't have a lot of stuff. God, I think the circumstances just aren't right for you to call me into this promise just yet. And as quickly, perhaps, as he overcame Exodus 20, verse 4, what's the verse right above that? Exodus 20, verse 3. I don't know about you, but I read about don't make any graven images before God, and that's kind of simple. Plus, I'm not really much of a craftsman, so I don't have to worry about that. But the heart of that is verse 3 in Exodus chapter 20. You shall have no other gods before me. We're eager to escape the foolishness of idolatry, and sometimes it seems simple. And as we walk in this call, suddenly God, having saved us from idolatry and from foolish things and from worthless things, he goes a step further and he starts to dictate how we order our family. He starts to reveal how he wants us to balance our career and our recreation and our relationships. Have you ever made this promise to God? God, I can see what you want from me. Just give me a little time to get settled, and I can commit to what you would have me to do. God, would you just, I promise that I will do what you want me to do. I just need some time to settle my life, to get some things straightened out. Do you see how making God a promise, not the promise of God, I'm going to stick with you through thick and thin. That's not the promise we're talking about. The promise is telling God that I am going to get my faith in line after I get my life in order. You see how that's sort of setting up a new idol? You're crafting these conditions. You're saying, okay, God, I know that when these conditions, when this structure is in a certain way, then I can follow you and I can commit to you. When I have my life settled, then I will give that settled life over to you. I can really get after the business of pursuing your promise. Faith brings us a stability that nothing else offers. Faith brings us a stability that work and house and family can only promise. I mean, those are all good things, but those things can change at the drop of the hat, can't they? New idols can rise out of the promises we make to God that replace our obedience to Him. New idols can come up out of promises that we make to God, that we make to Him in lieu of being obedient how we ought to be before Him. C.S. Lewis says this, and he's talking about learning because he lived during wartime, and there was the temptation to put your education on hold until the war settled, because we all know when wars are going to finish, right? If we let ourselves, we shall always be waiting for some distraction or other to end before we can really get down to our work. But the only people who achieve much are those who want knowledge so badly that they seek it while the conditions are still unfavorable. Favorable conditions never come. If Abraham had waited, you know, when my dad finally gets his life in order, then I'll commit to you. Abraham would still have been in Haran. If Abraham and Sarah had said, well, let's just wait until we get this fertility thing figured out, and then we'll be pleasing to you, they would not have been used by God in the way that He had planned for them. God's call takes Abraham by baby steps toward the promise, but those baby steps are as preparation for accepting the promise. Have you ever known someone who has gotten stuff, but they're not ready to use that stuff? I mean, the easiest one is the 15-year-old who gets the brand new, you know, expensive pickup truck. And, I mean, whatever, if you can afford whatever, but does that person know how to handle? Do they appreciate the amount of money that went into that kind of vehicle? Do you know those kind of circumstances where people get things before they're actually ready to accept those things? God is taking Abram by baby steps so that when he does receive the promise, he'll be able to use that promise wisely. There is wisdom in starting small. I mean, isn't that biblical? He was faithful with a little. Genesis 12, verse 4. Abram's baby steps. So Abram went. That's it. So Abram went. He goes. That was a big deal for him to finally leave his past. If you're a teenager and you're starting to say, you know, I have some doubts about this church thing and I have some doubts about this Bible thing. That's good because it means you're starting to make your faith your own. So go out and ask somebody about those doubts. Don't wrestle with them on the inside, but go out and ask somebody about those things that you're struggling with inside. If you're a non-Christian, then go ahead and take that step of asking somebody, would you study the Bible with me? I don't know where it's going to go, and it might change my life, but would you do that with me? If you're a single person, then maybe make faith your filter. And say, before I get too involved with somebody, they're going to pass through my faith filter. And we're going to talk about faith things before we start making a home or pretending to have a home. And if you're already married or if you're single and you're happy with that, then you got to keep faith as your foundation. Each day that you go out, faith remains the foundation. Those are the conversations that you're really seeking to have with people, are conversations about faith. So we go down a few more verses to verse 7. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I will give this land. So he built an altar to the Lord. He goes out, and then he goes a little ways, and then he stops and he builds an altar. Because going out and starting our life of faith is not entering into a rat race of frantic spiritual activity and just doing as many things as possible. See, Abram's not really doing much except worshiping right now. And so Abram leaves, but he leaves and then he pauses. And he pauses to contemplate the promise and to contemplate God. He's not getting busy for the sake of being busy, but he's worshiping God. Have you ever felt good after you've had one of those weeks? Like, you're so busy, and I've had these weeks too, but you're like, God, I'll pray, and I'll study my Bible, and I'll be a part of fellowship, and I'll do those things, I'll just not right now. Have you ever gotten to the end of the week and been like, that was the right decision? Has that ever been your experience? Because usually for me, when I do it the other way around, when I make God and my devotion to Him my priority, and I stop, and I'm not saying that I stop and make an altar, but I stop and I worship Him, that everything else seems to fall into place. Verse 8. And then from there he moved to the hill country on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. God called Abram, and finally Abram is beginning to call back upon God. Abram is starting to settle in with God, even though, is Sarai's barrenness been fixed yet? Has it been fixed yet? She's in the same place. Is Abram in the place that he was promised? Does he have that perfect retirement home that God is promising him? Does he have that yet? Is his family in order? Does he know exactly where he's going? No. But he's calling upon the name of the Lord. He's settling with God, even as the rest of his life seems to remain unsettled. Faith brings us into a stability and a confidence that our work and our home and our family can only promise. Abram's religion is rising up out of this life, this footsteps of faith, according to God's call and God's promise. And though Abram wasn't perfect, he brought God a life and not just a promise of what he would do. I appreciate their humanity. I appreciate their humanity as I find hope to walk with God. I'm challenged to begin walking with God as my life can remain unsettled, to set aside foolish distractions, but also to set aside my promises to God that put off faith in Him. I don't know if Abram had a Fitbit, but I bet he took more than 10,000 steps. I bet he took a whole bunch of steps before he got to that place where God was. He took a lot of steps in his faith, a lot of footsteps of faith, before he could look around and say, okay, I see the promise is starting to come together. Because that's God's job, is to see the promise coming together. Except we live in this place, and we'll end in Galatians chapter 3. We live in this place where we get to see the promise fulfilled. And really what remains is for God to finish that work in us. Galatians 3, verse 7. Know then that it is those of faith who are the sons of Abraham. And the scripture foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, in you shall all the nations be blessed. So then, those who are of faith are blessed along with Abraham, the man of faith. God has already made good on his promise to Abraham and on us. And that promise is to bring us justification, to make us righteous in his Son. God doesn't ask us to promise him anything. He asks us to walk with him in a life of faith. If you'd like to begin that walk, if you'd like to put your arm around somebody and be carried for a portion of your walk, then that's what the church is here, is to walk with you in your walk of faith with God. Please come forward if you have a need while we stand and sing together.